from there, and it looks like you've got a presentation under the application sharing window. And for the Ustreamers that are coming in, I will try to bring this out to you as well. All right. We'll hear from you, Stephen. So we're looking forward to this.
Well, hi, everyone, and it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm sorry we're starting a bit late, but this should be an interesting experience, and this is being recorded more ways than I can count, which is an interesting experience in itself. It's being recorded, of course, I assume in Illuminate. If it's not, somebody turn on the switch. If it's going out on Ustream, it's being recorded on Ustream. I've got my video camera running here, pointed at me right now, so there's a video being recorded as well. I was making remarks during Alex's introduction. I also have Audacity running, which is creating an audio. And that's pretty typical of the way people will learn in the future. And I see people are asking for the slides that are the slides to be tossed in the slide share. Let's see. Let me know whether does that work better? And I'll just pull out of that so I can see your comments. Is it better if I maximize the slides? I have no idea. No. Okay. you're only seeing half the slide. What if I move the slide? Does that help? And I'm still waiting to see better. It was better before. Isn't that weird? That figures. Okay, we'll go back to where it was then. This looks better now. Waiting for the thumbs up and thumbs down. I keep forgetting, and it's hard to remember. No. Someone says no, someone says good, someone says only see half. Good enough. Yeah, good scroll over, see fine. I can't make sense of this. You have to use your scroll bars. There, I'm going to compromise and hope that that works. Anyhow, I don't want to linger too long in these slides. Anyways, here's what I have in mind. I'm going to talk a little bit about the idea of personal learning. You've probably heard this a million times before, but I'm going to say it again anyways, just for completeness. What I really want to spend the most time today on is software that I've been working on. This is the software that powers my website, and I'm going to show you the back end of the software that powers my website. And it's an interesting thing for me because I've just received permission from National Research Council to open source this. So I'll be releasing this software that I'm showing as an open source application called Grasshopper, and you heard it here first. I don't think that there'll be millions of people using it or even tens of people using it. It's not the simplest software in the world to use. But what I want to do is I want to show you the software and merge the software with the description of personal learning and the personal learning environment. So what I want to try to show today is how the software instantiates the theory that we've all been talking about personal learning and personal learning environments. As I'm going here, if Alec, if you have the slides and you get the slides uploaded and you can use the slides instead of the screen sharing, that's cool. We'll do that. Just let me know on the chat. I'm monitoring the chat so I can easily switch over. And in the meantime, I'll just move on the slides and sort of hope that everybody can see them. The big thing about personal learning for me, and always has been for me, is about empowerment, and in particular the empowerment of the students. And what the personal learning environment is intended to do is create an environment, a learning environment, where the learners are in control. And of course, the question becomes for educators, as you can see on the slide, or maybe not, how do you teach if you no longer have power over students? So what I want to introduce to you today is the network approach to teaching. know, I'm not actually using this, the full slide. The idea of the network is that, well, very simply, everything is connected to everything else. And this changes a lot of the parameters, a lot of the basic precepts that we're used to working with in our everyday lives. For example, if everything is connected to everything else, and if this is true in perception and cognition as well as, you know, out there in the world and on the internet, then our perceptions, our experiences of the world depend on our understanding of the world. It creates an environment, as Lakatos says, we have theory-laden data. We cannot depend on our experiences alone. We understand our experiences through, if you will, the lens of our theories. Another factor. In a network, you have multiple mutually dependent variables. And what that means is if you change one thing, it changes another, that changes the first thing again. And so you don't have nice, simple cause and effect relations. I hear people talking all the time, you know, they're talking about educational theory, and they're trying to determine whether some sort of intervention works in education. So they say, okay, we'll take a class and we'll have an intervention, right? We'll hold everything else constant, have an intervention, see if that improved outcomes. But the problem is education isn't like that. Education and the learning of a single individual, much less a class, is the result of a very complex pattern of factors. And the same intervention one day will produce one result, and the next day will produce a different result. We get something more akin to chaos, something more akin to predicting the weather, and we do nice, simple cause and effect type relations. The network is, in an important sense, a breakdown of order. It's a breakdown of managers in charge and workers or peons below. The managers manage, the workers work. It's the breakdown of categorization and organization, everything in neat rows and neat classes. It's the breakdown of authority. It's the breakdown of the expert as opposed to the amateur, as opposed to the person who doesn't know it all. It's the breakdown of the idea that there are facts, that there is truth with a capital T. We see the results of that in things like postmodernism and ethnocentricity and relativism. In our domain and online and in the world of business and work and education, we see that manifest in things like the Kluhtrain Manifesto, where the authors say markets are conversations, or in Gilmore's We the Media, where crowdsourcing is as important as reporting. And it's interesting, there was a site launched by CNN not too long ago where anybody can upload a news article. Nothing is filtered. All of the news articles will be uploaded. All of them can be viewed, but they're ranked and reviewed by the readers, and CNN picks the very best to actually feature on CNN itself. And that's more along the lines of the media of the future. The network looks like the internet. And in that sense, and you can maybe see the diagram there, I'll let you all see the diagram, so I'm going to move the slideshow around a little bit. It looks like a mess. It looks like open source. It looks like social networks. It looks like blogs and blogging, like wikis, like collaborative writing, like tagging, like dig, like Technorati. It looks like Web 2.0. It looks like all of this stuff that does not come out of a bottle, does not come shrink-wrapped in a box off the shelf from a commercial provider. It comes most of all from the users, most of all from the people who create the internet. The network is all about, I don't want to say user-generated resources, because that creates this idea that there's resources that somebody else will consume. I don't want to say it's all about conversations, because I think it's deeper and more serious than conversations, but it's all about creativity and interactivity, communication, diversity, openness and sharing, and all of that. And in fact, it defies characterization, to be quite frank. you've heard all this before. I hope you've heard all this before. Alec, you've been telling them all this, right? From the network, you know, and now, there are different ways of looking at the network. I spend a lot of my time on the inside of the network. I spend a lot of time looking at the nature of these connections, the nature of these interactions. And so I look at, you know, scripts that parse XML and scripts that parse APIs and send data back and forth and all of that stuff. And from the outside, it looks like chaos. Again, there's no, as the slide says, no principles or rules describing quality with a capital Q. What counts as quality depends as much on individual preferences as any sort of authority saying this is quality and this isn't. There's no real rubric or metric, because what counts as good, what counts as effective, varies from person to person, place to place. There's no peers or committees of experts to review content and say this is good content and this is not bad content. There's no voting. There's no aggregation. James Sherwicki talks about the wisdom of crowds, and people very often misrepresent that as the wisdom of the majority. But that's not what Sherwicki is talking about. There are no votes. There is no final outcome that everybody agrees on. Rather, the wisdom of crowds, the wisdom of the network, comes from each person doing their own thing in their own way. And the knowledge and the learning that emerges from the network is distinct from the knowledge and the learning that exists in any particular individual. The knowledge and learning that emerges from the network does not depend on the properties of the people in the network. It's like the picture of Richard Nixon on the television. And I know I'm dating myself with that, but you look at the picture of Richard Nixon on the television, that picture exists because each pixel is doing its own thing, right? One pixel's black, another pixel's white. They're all in their own place. They're all in different places, in fact. It looks like a picture of Richard Nixon, not because it's made up of little tiny pictures of Richard Nixon. That would be really silly, in fact. Rather, the properties of the pixel have nothing to do with the properties of the overall image that we see. The property of the overall image that we see depends on how those pixels are related to each other, how those pixels are connected to each other. But even more so, the properties of that image depend crucially on somebody perceiving that image and being able to recognize it as a picture of Richard Nixon. Take that same picture of Richard Nixon, go to the street in Shanghai, show it around. Most people won't know what it is. That's some white guy. You know, they have no idea who it is. So the emergent properties are not only distinct from the individuals that make up the network, the emergent properties themselves depend on being recognized. And this is the way knowledge is created in a society. And it's also the way knowledge is created in an individual. And it makes more sense when you think of the knowledge that's created in an individual, because we don't think that the knowledge of the brain corresponds in any particular way to the knowledge contained in a neuron. In the same way, the knowledge of a society does not correspond in any particular way to the knowledge contained in an individual member of society. So that's why I say it's not voting, it's not aggregation, it's not, here's Fred's idea, let's everybody vote on Fred's idea, because then the knowledge of the mass would be the same as Fred's idea. It's not. It's the result of each individual working independently. And that's why, to me, network learning, personal learning, depends so much on the empowerment of the individual. It's not about getting everybody to think the same and do the same thing and believe the same thing. It's rather quite the opposite. It's about everybody trying to do something different, be creative differently, think different things. And out of all of these different perspectives and different points of view, a perspective and understanding shared by all of us, or not shared, but produced by all of us, of the whole emerges. So, how am I doing so far? I'm looking now at the chat window there to see if there's any reaction. And seeing none. Oh, here we go. I just had to scroll down here. Okay. All right. Okay, so I'm going to keep moving on here. I have to find my place because I'm not showing the actual... Oh, I hate this. One of the things that the Apple does very badly with PowerPoint is it allows me to move my PowerPoint window underneath the toolbars, and then I can't do anything with the PowerPoint window. Very silly. Okay, so there we are. That's chaos. That is the foundation, the background behind the personal learning environment. Easiest to follow the slides if you leave the window in the same place. I suppose that would be true, wouldn't it? Okay. So, here's the picture of the personal learning environment. Again, this has been all over the internet recently. And the way I want you to think about the personal learning environment is to think of the thing in the center where it says future VLE. That's you. That's the student. That is the learner. Think of that student as a node in the network. One node. And then all those bubbles around, I'm pointing at my screen. It'll look great on video, but it doesn't do a thing for you. Except, of course, on the video, you can't see the screen, so you see me pointing at something. Never mind. It'll all come together at some point. Anyhow, all those bubbles, the Live Journal, LearnDirect, Flickr, etc., these are all ways of linking to other entities in the network, other people, other sources of information, bits of content, bits of your own content, because your own content isn't going to be located in any particular place either. It's going to be as scattered as anything else on the network. So this idea of the PLE that we're viewing as a node in the network also has the technical foundation, which is described in this diagram as well. And so you see the little tiny print there where it says Atom or Portfolio Goal or RSS or Flickr API. These are the specifications, the protocols that one node of the network uses to communicate with another node of the network. And I want to make an observation here that even these protocols are not decided on or organized. The concept of the protocol, which is, as an aside, the way the internet itself was developed, is a concept that's based on agreement. Nobody tells you to use RSS. Well, some people do tell you, but there's nobody, they can't make you do it, right? There's no enforcement of this, right? And people use RSS because they decide to. They don't come to an agreement even. I don't sign a deal with Alec or anyone else that I will produce my thing in RSS and he will read my thing in RSS. I simply produce it. And if he wants to read it, he reads it in RSS. And even within RSS, there are efforts to standardize RSS. But again, there's no way to force you to produce compliant RSS. Just like there was no way to force you to produce compliant HTML. And the idea here is people within the rough parameters of the rough protocol kind of produce more or less valid HTML, more or less valid RSS. You can add things to it, you can take things away from it, and what makes it work or not work is completely and solely whether other people decide they want to use that or not. If I created, in fact I have, personal tags in RSS, these tags become part of RSS, the protocol, if and only if other people use them. If not, well, they're just Stephen's idiosyncrasies. So, on the screen right now is a mock-up of a personal learning environment called Plex that was produced by Scott Wilson and other people at Cetus in Britain. And they're working on a newer version. I've forgotten the name of it. Alec, maybe you can remember it and post it up there. Dang, I can't remember it. But they're producing a new version that should be up soon enough. And the other thing with this I can never tell where I am in the slides either with this. I really don't like the Mac version of PowerPoint. Here's something that I've worked on called My Glue, and this is implementing one of the basic principles of RSS and RSS networks and the personal learning environment. And the principle is you have multiple feeds. Each RSS feed corresponds to an information source out there on the internet somewhere. And by that, what I mean is it may correspond to a blog written by myself or by someone else. It may correspond to a delicious feed. It may correspond to photographs in Flickr. It may correspond to a set of videos in YouTube, whatever. And a list of these RSS feeds is defined by a protocol called OPML, Outline Processor Markup Language. So anyhow, the idea of gathering RSS is you gather a number of these RSS feeds and you join them together. And you might even filter them for certain topics. So I built a little thing called MyGlue. And let me see if I can't share. Application sharing. No, that's not it. I've forgotten where to share my applications now. It's got to be it. Pause application sharing. Sorry, I'm looking to find out where I share my... Firefox. Under tools, thank you. Under tools, sharing, application sharing. Okay. No, it's not working. I'm going to turn off the sound. You can give me an instruction. Oh, there we go. Okay, now I'm sharing my desktop, so I'll have to be really careful about what I use. I assume I'm sharing my desktop. Is this correct? The beer is integral to the gestalt of the experience. That would be true. My audio cuts in and out. That's probably because I'm speaking too silently, Laurie. I'll try to speak a bit louder so that I'm creating better audio. Okay, I'm opening my web browser now, and it's blanked out new tab. Well, doesn't that figure? Okay, well, let's see if I can... There we go. You should be seeing my Firefox right now. Could somebody say yes if you're seeing my glue on Firefox on your screen? That's sounding like a no. Oh. Sorry. The audio on looks almost exactly the same as the audio off. I've been talking, but without the button pressed. I should be sharing the MyGlue screen on the Firefox right now. Are you seeing that? Excellent. So the big problem was the fact that I simply didn't have the microphone on. This is my glue, and all this does, and I'm just going to scroll down through it a bit, all this does is bring in posts and pictures and things from different RSS feeds that I have out there. And so these are posts from my newsletter, and I'll scroll down a bit. Here are some Flickr photos that I took today, and that's probably going to be about it because that's all I produced today. So that's my glue, and that's all there is to my glue. It's a very simple application. Join some RSS files together. And now I'm trying to find my place again. There we go. 12. This is one step up on that concept. This is something called RSS Writer. And we're going to go back to Firefox and toss that into the fire here. This is RSS Writer. Here, I'm aggregating content sources. I'll aggregate my glue, which you just saw. Now the stuff from my glue is going to show up in the left-hand window. And here you can see it. Here's all the stuff, just like from before. And I'll drag and drop the photograph. Now this is, in the yellow here, this is my editing area. I can create content. And the idea here is now I've aggregated stuff. Now I've got it on my website. I'm working with the stuff. And then I could send it off to half an hour. And I'll just hit submit. And that'll produce an error because I didn't bother to finish it. But the idea here is I can gather stuff together. I can work with it. And then I feed it forward. The idea here, the principle here is in slogan form, aggregate, remix, repurpose, feed forward. And the idea here is you aggregate, you bring it together, you remix, you're joining information from different sources, from different people. You repurpose, you're adding your own spin to it, you're localizing it, you're putting your own perspective onto it, and then feed forward, you're sending it out there to the world to either prosper or not to prosper, depending on how that works. That was 12, this is 13. Now what we have here is something called the EduRSS Viewer. And this is where I've taken the software that produces my website and combined that with some of the concepts that have produced the RSS Writer and the MyGlue. So I'm going to flip over to my own website here. And, drum roll please. And it's not going to work. That's pretty funny. Okay, actually I'd rather go to the main website first. And I'm just going to pause for a second because I'm moving the camera here that's in my room. For those of you who are on video, you get the wonderful surprise of being able to see the screen too, I hope. Okay, get that zoomed in there. There we go. Oops, oh, that's pretty good. I just hope I don't knock it over. Okay, so this is my website, and you know, it's probably... Oh, you can't see the video. I'm recording the video. Okay, so this was for the people who are watching the video later on, but not now. I'll make this available to all of you later as well. So anyhow, this is my website. There's three major things to point to. First of all is the newsletter, which is OL Daily, and I have to click twice every time to make this work. That's interesting. It's got to be a function of the Illuminate. So I send out this newsletter once every weekday, and it goes out by email, it goes out by RSS, it goes out by web, and there's even a mobile version of it. And there it is. Also, on the site, I have EduRSS, which I'll come back to in a second. I also have discussion threads, and all of this looks pretty ordinary so far. And so here are the things, these are the comments that people have sent to me over time. Now, I also have EduRSS, as I mentioned. And if you were browsing in my website, you'd find out about EduRSS by clicking on the research link. Now what EduRSS does is it aggregates RSS feeds from a variety of EduBloggers. And you can see that list of EduBloggers on the EduRSS feeds page. And here's the list. And as you can see, it's a fairly lengthy list. And I'll just quickly copy and paste the URL for the feeds list, so that if you wanted to pop into that yourself, you could. Each one of these is a different EduBlogger. And now you can, and I want you to think or visualize now the network, right? This is the network, because all of these is, I don't know, it's about 500 individuals out there producing their own content, are all interrelated with each other in various ways. They're interrelated by email. They're interrelated by knowing each other, seeing each other during the day, by Skyping each other, but also they're interrelated in their blogs themselves by linking to each other, by citing each other, by commenting on each other's posts, and so on. And so there's this dense network that's created out of all of these people. The idea of personal learning is that you learn by becoming a part of this network. And basically, it's kind of hard to explain. The idea is that the learning occurs through, sometimes it's called the participation in the community of practice, but I think it's wider than that. Thomas Kuhn used to talk about learning by learning how to do the problems at the end of the chapter. I sometimes say you learn about physics by learning to think as a physicist. Remember earlier I was talking about facts and perceptions depending on our beliefs, our prior world views. You don't just see something, you see something as something. Well, the way to acquire these world views is to place oneself into a community of practice, a network like this, and interact, thereby having and sharing the same experiences, the same conversations, the same vocabulary, and as a result, the same concepts and same background information as the others. So you learn about physics by practicing physics with physicists. Now, backing out of that, the idea now is, on the website here, I also have my own content, and in particular, I have my own research topics. Now, in the traditional way of doing things, I would have my topics categorized according to, you know, the Library of Congress cataloging system, or Dewey Decimal, or something like that. But my own list is idiosyncratic to me. In a sense, this is like a folksonomy, and I'm not sure if Alec has talked to you about folksonomies yet. Oh, thanks for the link update, Kyle. The idea here is that categorization is accomplished by each person categorizing the phenomena, in this case, the links that are presented to me, according to their own needs and their own interests. We each come up with our own system of categorization. And then out of that, if you take all of those systems of categorization, out of that emerges a form of categorization that is, and I don't want to say the aggregation, although that's the way it tends to be produced these days, but the overall categorization representing the way the community as a whole might categorize the phenomena, in this case, web posts. Cindy's asking, have we seen folksonomy outside education in the corporate world yet? And the answer to that is absolutely. In things like IBM, for example, has an intranet where they're using a lot of these technologies, and one of these things is categorization. And I like Kyle's answers. Yeah, we use it. Think Kleenex, think Coke. That's an interesting response. Branding is a form of corporate folksonomy. Now, that is an interesting concept. See, that's why it's always good to do these things, because I never would have thought of branding as corporate folksonomies, but there you go. Okay, moving on. I'm trying to go fast and not fast at the same time, if that makes any sense. Another thing that I have on my site that I'd like to point to, I have one page for my presentations. I've commented before about this sort of thing. Right now, presentations, somebody goes to a conference, they read a paper, that's it, it's done. If they're very lucky, the paper will be archived. I think something like this is more likely to be the way of the future, where the presentation is created, the slides are posted on a site like SlideShare, there's audio is available, there isn't any on this one, but if we go back to my homepage, we'll see. Here are the slides on SlideShare. Here's the audio of a talk, and I'd click it, except you might hear it, because I don't have the, let's see if that works. Okay, that's really pushing it, isn't it?
Thank you very much, William. It's feedback on your...
No, okay. I probably shouldn't have done that. I'm really messing around with the bandwidth. Sound coming in, sound going out, whatever. But the idea here, I want you to notice two things about this. First of all, I'm preserving all the stuff that I create. Academics in the past, they didn't do this. Researchers, they didn't do it. Nobody did this, right? But I've got the audio of my talks, the slides of my talks, in some cases the video of my talks, and all of this is being presented as a nice, neat package. And I've got one of these for each one of my presentations. There's no reason why people in the future, assuming that I've sent anything of value, couldn't go and work through my presentations. If somebody had the time and they worked through from the earliest presentations, which are way back in, 87, that's ugly, all the way through to now, they get a pretty good education, well, at the very least in my own thought. And if they worked through a collection of these presentations created by an aggregation of researchers on a given topic, they would get the resources for a very good grounding in that field. And if you combined that kind of learning experience plus the community, the interaction, the conversation that happens in the existing community, now you are getting a very full and a very robust learning experience. I do the same thing for my publications as well. And so there's a page for each one of these publications. Anyhow. Now, in the back end of my website, this is the part that I use, that I work with. This is the software I use to create my website, because I don't create all of these web pages individually, because that would be ridiculous. Nobody has time for that. So basically what I've done is I've created a website management system. Think of it as like WordPress on steroids. And one of the things I really want to emphasize about my system is it's intended to be used by an individual. Now, the way the software is written, you can install one instance of the software on a server and then run a whole bunch of individual websites. But the idea is each individual has their own database. Each person has their own database. This website is one node in a network. And that makes it very distinct from the learning management systems of today, or the social networks of today, where some organization hosts the system and then all the people come to it. So like all the people go to Facebook, or all the people go to the U of A LMS system, or all the people go to the corporate intranet. Here, each person has their own site. So I manage different content on this site, and you can see the type of content that I manage on the left. And just very quickly, in case you can't read it, author, box, event, feed, file, journal, link, optalist, mapping, page, person, post, presentation, publication, project, task, template theme topic view. The way this software is written, it's actually very easy for me to add new types of content, and consequently I have. So, one of the things, okay, that you can see on the site are pages. And I have various pages on my website. And in fact, OL Daily, the newsletter that I showed you earlier, is one of the pages. And here it is again, just in case you forgot. Now, if I look at the inside of OL Daily, this is a form that allows me to generate my page. And the way I generate my page is I have some code that defines the page, and then I cache an actual HTML version of the page. I need to do it this way because of traffic. I don't want to be generating a new version of the page each time Google wants to hit my web page. So I actually have a two-stage caching system. That's my wonderful clock. And every hour it chimes the bells. And many of my presentations have my clock chiming in the background. Now, if you look closely, you can see that I have some coding in here. And this coding is unique to the system, but it's actually fairly straightforward. It's the little keyword command. For those of you who worked with Cold Fusion, you'll notice some similarities, except I use this to produce, in the end, static web pages rather than dynamic web pages. I can produce dynamic web pages, but I don't want to. So, keyword database presentation, number equals 20, format equals email, expires equals 16, that's 16 hours, all, and then sort, how to sort it, creation date descending. So what that's doing is that's defining what I would like to see, information I want to see. So what this code will do is it will take the most recent presentations up to 20 that have been produced in the last 16 hours, and it'll print them there in the email format. And so my newsletter is actually made of three types of content. The presentation, which you only see once in a while, because I only do presentations once in a while. The posts, which I do every day. And then a different type of post, which I also do every day. So that's what creates the newsletter. And in particular, the articles and the links. The articles, if I write an article on the website, the link, if I write a link on the website. So this code creates my newsletter on the fly. So all I have to do, if I want the newsletter to work, is to input some posts or input some presentations or whatever. So I create a new post, say. So I'll list some posts so we can see it. Here is the post that I did for today's newsletter, the Meme Passion Quilt post. And if we edit that, we see, oops, that's a comment, sorry. here it is. Notice my comments go right in there with the post. That makes it easier for them to be searched. So here's the post, and here's the editing window for the post. And what I want to do one of these days is make this a what you see is what you get editing window. But I'm very lazy, so I haven't done that. I just find it easier to type the HTML. But I think that other people who didn't grow up with HTML might prefer a WYSIWYG. It would be a very simple matter to add a WYSIWYG to it. So, as you can see, I just add the different types of content I want. Now, remember, we saw the list of feeds. Here's another view of that list of feeds. This is the same list of feeds. These are the feeds that are harvested by EduRSS. And I can edit any one of these feeds. And here's the information about this feed. And if I want to harvest a new feed, it's just as easy as creating the new feed. And then when the feed is created, I have to either, I can approve it, I can retire it. So I manage whether or not I harvest this feed with these retire or approve buttons. And I can harvest a feed at any time just by clicking on this harvest button. Let's see if that's still working. Oh, never mind. Well, it takes a couple of seconds for something to harvest. It must be working because it's taking a couple of seconds. Yeah, there's no output. Okay. It did harvest, trust me, but it doesn't produce the output because I have it running automatically in the background on my server, and if it produced output, it would send me that output by email, which means I would get an email from my web server every minute, which I don't like. Okay, now, where was I? So those are the feeds. Now, if we go to my admin system, okay, here's the harvester. The way I've set up my harvester is it harvests one feed every minute, and the reason for that is I'm just a small website. If I harvested 500 feeds all at once, my website would stop working. So I organize my feeds in a queue, and it just harvests them once every minute, and so I just harvest the next one in the queue. And so what I'm doing here is what my web server is doing is it's reaching out onto the internet, it's grabbing somebody else's content, and it's bringing it back into my system. Then it's processing that content as it comes in, and here it's displaying the content on the screen so I can see it. Now I can see what I've just harvested here, but what's very important is it has gone into the database, so it becomes part of the material that I can work with now. I have completed the aggregate part of the aggregate remix, repurpose, feed forward part of the equation. Now what I can do is I pop into the viewer, and this viewer now I'm looking at something that has just been harvested. So this is from a difference weblog, and so this is one post, and this is another post, and so I read through these. And so I'm reviewing them, thinking about them. Eventually, the idea is I'm going to put a mechanism to rank these, a mechanism to flag these or whatever. But right now, I have a mechanism to blog these. So now here I am. I'm in the edit post. It has filled out the screen for me with the stuff that I've just harvested. So the same system that I use to harvest my content is the same system that I use to read my content, and now it's the same system that I'll use to write about and blog my content. And then once I've finished blogging, once I've finished writing my post here, I'll go back to the admin screen, and I'll first test my newsletter, because, well, you know, you make mistakes. I made a pretty good one today. I sent an empty newsletter, so here I've tested the newsletter. When I test the newsletter, it also updates a whole bunch of pages. Here's a page with all my recent comments on it. It updates that page. It updates the OL Daily page. It updates my list of publications. It updates, well, there's a whole bunch of pages that it updates. And then once I've decided that, yes, good, my newsletter is good, then I send my newsletter. Who do I send it to? I send it to my list of people. And here's my list of persons. There they are. And that goes on for another, I don't know, 40 pages or whatever. And those people can all manage their own account on my site. Remember, I'm not trying to create a community where everybody comes to me, but I need to create some way that people can interact with me. So here's a place where they can manage their subscriptions if they want to subscribe to my newsletter. Here's a place where they can change their personal information. And the system also works with OpenID. So you just type in, you create a user account on my system, and then you type in your OpenID, and it associates your OpenID with your user information. And, or you can just register with an OpenID. Okay, so we have that. Here's the, I showed you the presentation page before. Here's what it looks like on the back end. Here's a presentation, here's the description, and so here's, I just take this, see where it says audio player, I just take the code that the audio website gives me, and I just pasted it in here, and here for the SlideShare, I take the code that SlideShare gives me, and I just paste it in here, and then when I save this, then when I run the presentation page, it gathers this information, formats it, and puts it on the web page for me. And if you're wondering how it knows to do that, Every type of information has its own type of view, and actually different views for different types of outputs, for email, for HTML, for lists, and so on. So here's the presentation, and here's what I want my presentation to look like as HTML, and I've defined that. And the way I'll be distributing this software, which is why it's taking me a little bit of time to set up, is I'll be distributing not just the code and not just the SQL that defines the databases, but also all of these views and all of these, these page definitions, the keyword commands, so that basically the way it should work is if you run the install database and then you put in the Perl scripts, it should all be set up for you. And so you don't have to create all of this from scratch. You just tweak what you've already got. That's the way it should work. Cindy is saying, how does this fit with Darcy's EduGlue? This is what was created before EduGlue. I'm jealous about that. I just want to show you one more thing before I quit. And that's this mappings. This is new. That's why there's only one thing. But the idea here is a mapping is a way of taking content in from some site out there in the world and then assigning it to a particular type of content on my site. Right now, my Harvester takes RSS feeds, and they always become links. And so here's my link, here's my list of links. These are all things that have been harvested from websites, and these are the ones that we just harvested just a few minutes ago. But what I want to do is I want to harvest different kinds of content from both my own sites out there somewhere and other people's. For example, I have a blog on Blogger, and what I want to do is take the RSS from my blog on Blogger and feed it in, but not to list it just as a link. I want it to actually go into my site as an article. Or as another example, there might be an RSS feed out there with event information, a start time, an end time, a location, or whatever. And I want to harvest that, but I want to feed that into my events listing so that it can become part of my calendar automatically. Other things, photographs, if I'm harvesting from Flickr, I want to be able to feed them into a photograph listing. So basically what this does is it determines the source. Now the source is always a feed, but a mapping here captures a certain type of feed. So I can either say capture a specific feed or a feed type. I might use this for like iCal files or calendar files, for example, or I might use this for friend of a friend files. Say I don't want my friend of a friend file harvest to be put into links. I want my friend of a friend file harvest to be put into the author database. Or I might want to harvest, map something depending on whether it has a certain field. I want to capture only those RSS files with a DC author field, say. And then, or I might want to harvest specific value pairs. So if an RSS feed has an author of a certain person, then I would define that here. Author equals so-and-so. So that's my source. Then I assign it to a destination, and that's any of my content types. And again, my list of content types grows daily. And then that's diagnostic. And then I map. These are the data elements on the source, and these are data elements on the destination. So I can customize exactly how that data is coming into my own system. Now, the reason why I'm doing it this way is because if I set up this kind of thing, I only need to do it once, and then it's constantly propagating data for me. For example, one of the things that I have in mind is an events calendar, but an events calendar, not one that I have to populate, not one that other people have to populate, and importantly, one that can be unique to me. One where The same system can be used to create my events calendar, your events calendar, your friend's events calendar, and so on. Now, how do you do that? Well, I harvest RSS files with event information, and I map that to my events data. So I harvest your RSS file. Now, if you have an event, you produce an RSS file with event data in it. Now, the neat thing about that is, because you're publishing your event data as an RSS file, anybody can harvest that information, not just me. So I harvest your event information and add it to my calendar. Somebody else harvests your event information and they add it to their very different calendar. So the idea here is that we're each creating our own personal version of the events calendar based on aggregating events from around the internet, and all of this happens automatically. And the idea here is to put all the drudge work to the background, to put all the harvesting and searching and trying to find all to the background. Same thing we were talking about tags. So I do tags as topics. Here's my list of topics. We saw this earlier, right? Well, if we look at one of my lists of topics, here's a topic, audio chat and conferencing. But what that is in fact a string. Now, this coding here with the brackets and the pipe symbols, this is what is known as a regular expression. And what a regular expression does is a pattern that can be matched to the text of an incoming piece of data. For me, my topics, I don't tag manually. Who has the time to tag manually? Nobody has the time to tag manually. So I tag automatically. I define this my way. My software does the tagging for me. And then, of course, it puts the tags into the posts that I send out into the world as well. All done automatically. The idea here, again, is that this is creating for me a personal capacity that I did not have before. It gives me the capacity to aggregate, to organize, to categorize, and manipulate a large amount of information. And I'm able to spend my time and my effort looking at it, reading it, understanding it, adding value to it, creating things from it. And so what I'm trying to do here is to maximally place myself into as deep and as wide a network as possible. And that's how I learn. Now, that's basically where I want to end the actual presentation part of the presentation. It's about an hour and 10 minutes in, according to my clock, which I hope is the same as your clock. And it's probably a pretty good spot to stop this and to move into discussion and commentary, because I see the chat windows just rolling like crazy here. So I'll leave the web browser up on the screen, and I'll turn off the microphone, and we'll get questions, and that way you won't have to listen to my cat meow either. So now I and the people listening on audio and the people on the video camera wait expectantly for the questions to come in. And we do have questions coming in. There's always a bit of a lag, right? This is the part only you on the video.
I got the number one, so I'll grab the mic. Hi, Stephen. This is Cindy from Calgary. So now I always forget my question by the time I get to the mic. What I wanted to ask was, Dan put a really great analogy up on the chat window about Linux is incredibly or outrageously customizable and MacWin is outrageously simple to use. So I'm interested in your perspective of what happens in an environment where, you know, the true personalization of the learning environment is about making it really personal, but it's complex and difficult for people to truly personalize it the way you've been able to. So it's more a what-about-the-masses question.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I don't have a simple answer for it. My own response is, what I've developed is the result of working with the system over a number of years, and that has an advantage and it has a disadvantage. The advantage is the design evolves over time to become as simple as possible given the task, because if it's not working properly, it becomes really annoying in a hurry. But the disadvantage is I become very familiar with the system as it's currently designed, and then offers quirks or idiosyncrasies. I'm just used to working around them, and they're the sort of thing that would completely frustrate somebody. That's why I'm open sourcing it. I'm open sourcing it for two reasons. The first reason is I hope other people will help code it. But, you look at the projects in SourceForge, and I'm a realist. Unless it becomes something like Moodle or WordPress, I'm not going to get a whole lot of coding help. But the major hope is that people, as they try it, will experience the usability problems with it and experience where it is difficult to work with, and that will lead me to make the interface easier to use. There are ways to make very complex tasks fairly simple if we hit on the right interface. And, there's certainly an art to interface design. But I think, first of all, we need to know what we're after, and I think that's a big part of this project. And then secondly, we need to know how do we make this simple and intuitive for people. And that's going to be an interesting task.
Thanks.
Okay, and I see Darcy is going to type quickly, but I don't know who's going first, but I'll shut up here. I think I'm not talking right now.
I guess it's me. Hello, Stephen. I'm a great fan of your work. Always wanted to ask this. I know you've talked about networks and various influences. What are some of the topics right now? You showed a very long list of different topics. What is the one or two or three topics right now that are really on your list of things that you're interested in researching, if I may ask?
Yeah, that's a great question. it might be too good a question. Because, the topics help, but the topics don't define a research area. I'm thinking. I've been doing some stuff in digital rights, but that's just part of the job. That's not so much. This stuff about groups and networks continues to hold my interest. It's held my interest now for a year and a half or so. And trying to articulate how a network can work, how you can get order out of the chaos, if you will, how you can get knowledge out of the craziness, how you can get creation without managers, trying to understand that, trying to explain that, continues to be of interest to me. And I'm interested in this not simply from the perspective of learning, although this is something important to me, but also from the perspective of the organization of society, not so much politics, because I think politics is a group-based phenomenon and not so much a network phenomenon, but how we organize things. The danger with networks is you slide into some sort of Ayn Rand individualism, and I totally don't intend that. And the other danger of networks is you slide into communism, and I don't intend that either. It's this middle thing that isn't either or the other, and so it's very often misinterpreted. So that interests me a lot. The related to this is, this software that I've shown you, I'm trying to understand if I create the capacity for a genuine network to happen, will it happen? And, I don't expect even 10 people to use my software, let alone thousands. I do expect the concepts to be copied. That's the intent, right? People with a better sense of design and people who are much better programmers than I will come out with something that does this kind of thing. It's the same thing that happened with the learning management system back in 97 or so, 98. I was building learning management systems, and that got copied, and then they patented it, but we'll leave that aside. Now, this sort of thing will be copied as well. And what I want to do is try to articulate as clearly as I can that vision so that we do end up with a technology that creates a network effect. And then it's kind of like a large living lab, right? We'll see if the network effect happens. Now, me, I'm virtually certain it will. I have a great deal of confidence that it will, because that's how networks work. And we have lots of examples of networks. But people, you know, even today, I'm reading my email. Well, what's your evidence for this? What's your proof for this? Well, you know, there is no proof other than the thing itself, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I looked at your slideshow on networks and groups, and I was so enthralled by it. I mean, right now in Saskatchewan, we've got personal learning, learning communities, and the whole idea is that I think a lot of learning communities are being implemented as groups, and I think true learning communities, and maybe other people could speak to this, really should be a network, and I just love that presentation, and again, thanks a lot for that information.
Yeah, there's there's no shortage of networks out there. You just have to know where to look for them. I mean, there are these communities that get organized, but you know, I still remember as clear as you know, as though it were yesterday. At one of David Wiley's conferences, the only one I went to, in fact, where Aaron Brewer, someone that he works with, talked about the communities that formed on Yahoo groups around things like beekeeping. You know, and here is this, it's genuinely, well, it's not perfectly a network, but it's getting there, a network on beekeeping. And it has a lot of the properties. Now, it's all owned by Yahoo, so, you know, the individual empowerment of the members is limited to what they can do with the Yahoo interface, which isn't a whole lot. But all of the other things, you know, it's open, you can join, you can leave, you know, it's diverse, you have people who are into bees, people who are into beekeepers, people who are just curious, you know, all of the properties of networks are there, and that's just one example. And, you know, you look out there on the internet, look at Flickr, look at all these different kinds of, you know, and they're called groups, but even there, they're more accurately more like networks, because again, they're more or less open. All these things that people are doing on Flickr, look at user communities of certain technology, look at fans, you know, there's a Star Trek network, a Star Trek fan network, and how you can't even define it, because there are so many ways that has of interacting with each other. So, the networks are out there, but they're not the sorts of things that are created. The only way that you can create a network that is a learning network is to increase the capacity, to increase the empowerment of the individuals who will then go out and form the networks. That's what I believe.
Hi, Stephen. It's Ken here. I just have a question, and I might have missed it. I'm not sure if you talked about it or not, but I'm sort of interested in how you started with this. Like, is it all, you start writing the HTML code, or do you have a program that you're using, or object-based programming to get you going with this? And my second question is, since it's open source, have you had a lot of interest from other programmers that have sort of tinkered with it, tried to fine-tune it? And I guess my third question, are there other products out there like this? Like, have you seen others like this around the world that can
help customize these types of tools?
Thanks.
Okay. The software is written entirely by hand, which is, in a sense, sad. But it's not that long. Like, you know, if you do it the Microsoft way, you need like 180,000 lines of code. My software is, I think, less than 10,000 lines of code. It's not long software. It's because it's written in Perl. You can do that. So every line of this has been written in a text editor. I haven't used any software generation tools. It hasn't yet been posted on SourceForge. I've created the project for it, but the code hasn't been uploaded yet. That's happening in just a matter of days now. So I haven't had the feedback from the other coders or tinkerers yet. As for other products like it, probably the closest right now is WordPress. I'm just realizing my video is probably very boring because it's still looking at the screen. Sorry, poor video people. I've just given you a whole bunch of boring video. That might be too close. It feels too close. I think WordPress with a bunch of the mods is probably the closest, and the reason why I say that is it is the software that is most obviously individual based. You know, you don't have too many groups of people using a single WordPress account. Also similar is Drupal. Although that said, I will observe that when I migrated my site from the NRC server to my own personal server about a year ago, I actually tried to use Drupal instead of my own code. And I found that a lot of the things that I wanted to do, that I do with my code, I just could not do with Drupal. My code is a lot more, you can define the different data types. In Drupal, you have to install a thing called the Content Construction Kit. And then the Content Construction Kit isn't working with native database tables. It's building extra tables on top of the original Drupal tables, and that creates a real performance hit on the Drupal site. And you still can't relate the stuff. Like, I have the views here, and I have a view, say a post of some sort. I can put a keyword command inside one of my views. So I can have, and that's how I do the posts with the comments, for example. In my view, I show the post, but then the keyword command collects all the comments to that post and puts them there. And I could have all the comments to the presentations. I don't have them set up like that right now, but I could. So all the this of that. So all the posts that a person has created, all the links that a person has created, all the links come from a journal. You see what I mean? So that the content is all related to each other. The idea here is the design of this system is intended to create networks with the data as well as networks with the person using the system and other people who are exchanging data. I want the network effect to be a property of this system. And that I haven't seen out there. Like, WordPress doesn't do anything like that. Drupal and the rest are content management. They're all about managing data rather than let the data sort itself out. So I think that there's a lot that is very unique to this.
I'm up, Stephen. It's Kyle Litchwell. I just wanted to ask about participation in these communities and the human factor. I know you're sucking in lots of different feeds and this kind of thing, but are you getting to know the people that are writing them? I know that you participate in the 366 photo pool, and I think that there's lots of learning that's happening there, but I wonder what your thoughts on Twitter and Delicious and some of the other social sites maybe. So thanks. I'll just turn off the audio.
I'd say so. I mean, I'm not really a social person, so I might be a bad person to judge on that. Although, you know, I mean, and again, like, the network isn't the way it should be at this point in time. I mean, all I can do with the other bloggers is download their blogs and read their stuff. If I want to actually interact with them, I send comments, but that's all I can do. I need to use other types of software. Now, I play Scrabble on Facebook. I Skype people from time to time. Not that often. I'm not really a phone person either. I don't use Delicious, so that I don't really participate in that. I do use Flickr, and I've used that more. And yeah, I think the 366 group has been good. It's given me an insight into other people. Yeah, but all of that said, the combination of all of these things, all the posts, the conversations, the emails, the conferences, that results in a community of people that I more or less know. And I use those words very precisely. Some people I know more, other people I know less.
Steven, are you there?
Oh, jeez. Yeah. I just answered that question. Thank you. I just answered that question, but without the microphone. I hate this microphone button. This is the worst microphone button I've ever seen. I hope somebody on Illuminate is listening. The short answer to the question is yes, sort of. I prefaced it by talking about how I'm not a social person, but I talked about the limited capacity to interact using things like blogs because, all I can do is read the comments or read the posts and comment, and that's about it. But, if you take blogs and Flickr and Facebook and all of these things combined, then, I sort of more or less know the other people individually, personally. And I say more or less because some people I know more, but, most of the people out there are what would be called weak ties, right? I'm not closely connected to them. And, the network, the other thing, too, is, we go back to this groups and networks thing, and I've been criticized for this, but one of the ways I characterize the difference is I talk about groups being the emotional thing and networks being the cognitive thing. And I try to be careful not to mix these two. Because people will say, you need groups in your life. You need the attachment. You need the sense of belonging, da-da-da-da-da-da. And I say, yeah, absolutely right. Everybody needs to belong. Everybody needs some sort of socialness. You need the connection of family. I wrote an article where I talked about being on a sports team and the sense of belonging of the sports team. And that's an emotional connection, and that's the humanness and the interaction and all of that. On the other hand, if you're trying to govern a country, that's a bad way to do it. Because governing a country should be more about cognitive things than emotional things. If you govern a country with your emotions, you end up going to war. And so we come back to learning. Is learning an emotional thing or a cognitive thing? Well, there are some emotional aspects, and so I do need to have some kind of connection to the people that I'm learning from, but it's mostly a cognitive thing, which means that it would be mostly a network thing and much less a group thing. And so from my perspective, in my life I need to have that social connection with other people, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the people that I'm working with and learning from. I know that's a long roundabout answer to a simple question, but that's the best I can do with that right now.
So my question is very quick and pragmatic. I've been subscribing to OLDLE by email. You mentioned we can get it through RSS, but I've been on your site and I can't figure out how to do that. Can you help?
I sure can. Let me ask first, do you use an RSS reader like Bloglines or Google Reader?
Yes, Google.
Excellent. If you go to my homepage, and I'll just click on it here, and I'm hoping you're able to see this, up in the address bar where it says downs.ca, to the far right of that is a little orange box. You click on that little orange box, and you get, oh wait, you're using Internet Explorer, aren't you?
Um, I can do it from my Mac.
Okay. Here's the other way to do it. Because Internet Explorer isn't in the 21st century yet. Take this address, which somebody had, Ben has just posted. Take that, go to Google Reader. So here you are in Google Reader. Right, I have to click twice on everything. And once you're in Google Reader, you should be seeing that on your screen, where it says Add Subscription. Click on that, and paste that address in where it says Add Subscription, and then click on the Add button, and you're subscribed. And I should turn off the microphone.
Hi, Stephen. Ben Schoenberg here. Just a really quick.
Dan to work this up. I wonder how that image is coming. Oh well. And I need to be careful because I only had an hour and 48 minutes left on that hard drive. And we're still waiting for Dan. Dan has disappeared. Cone of silence is in place. See, I'm trying to make this video more interesting. You've hung in for more than an hour and a half. You deserve to be entertained at this point, too. Still not hearing anything from Dan. There we go.
Okay. Sorry, I'll try that again. Just a quick question, Stephen, in regards to open source. Mostly, I'm curious because as I was watching what you were doing there, it seems to me that almost always it's an individual user who's scratching their personal itch who creates a really useful piece of software like your Stephen's Web that you've done in Perl here. And I'm just wondering, do you think it's possible for open source to occur collaboratively right off the bat, or do you need to congregate around some benevolent dictator if it's Python?
You know, it's this whole idea of collaboration again. And we go back to groups and networks. This is why it continues to fascinate me, this whole topic. Collaboration, is that a group activity or a network activity? And it's interesting, open source, properly so-called, has developed into something like a group activity with a manager, the fairly standard traditional sorts of organization. But open source as a movement is a network activity where you have basically an entire software movement based around somebody scratching their itch. So I don't see the creator of a product as you style it, a benevolent dictator, because the way open source works is anybody can take that code and set up shop and start doing whatever they want to it. There's actually a name for that. It's called forking. With an O. yeah. So, remember what I was talking about earlier in this presentation about protocols and agreement. The people who work on an open source product that has been created by an individual are engaged in a type of interaction, a type of protocol-based interaction. The person who runs an open source project does not manage those people. Cannot manage those people because they can't force them to do anything. They can't even force them to, if you don't do what I say, you can't work on the project anymore, because the person can take the project as well and have their own version of the project. So it's not collaboration in the tight group sense where you have managers and controls and attachment and everybody has to think the same thing and all of that. It's rather collaboration in a looser protocol kind of way. I sometimes style it as a mutual exchange of mutual value. You each get something out of it. And, you know, any open source project, you look at any open source project, it looks from the outside, especially by people who grew up, you know, with manager speak in their heads, you know, it looks like, you know, a boss and a bunch of minions. But really what you've got is this complex dance, especially in the larger projects, the complex dance of interaction and conversation and decision happening among people who are working on this. And at any point in time, they could split off into different projects. But, you know, the dance pulls them together and it pulls them apart. And it's this constant flux back and forth. So it's not a management kind of process. I know it looks like one from the outside. Looks like Mark Dougiemass is in charge of Moodle. And it looks like whoever it is in charge of WordPress. But really, anybody can take that code and set up the shop themselves and say, well, this is WordPress Mark II, or what I guess you can't use the name, but you know what I mean. So there is no dictatorship happening. There is no management happening. It's all collaboration in the very loose sense of the word. Funny, the comments. I've got Linden's... That's the other way of developing things.
All right, so I'll cut in here. I'm absolutely terrible. Incoherent. Is it breaking up or something?
And he lost it. He tried.
Hello. Speaking from Rob's computer now. Does that sound okay? I had to go all the way to North Battleford for that. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Stephen. I had some major audio problems at the beginning there, but it seemed to be resolved, and I think we got it all recorded in Illuminate. We're also going to put together a quick podcast version of this speech. I really want to thank Stephen, especially. We've all been very big fans, and we're always waiting for that OL Daily to come out. Every single day I can't leave work without it, so you've been inspirational for us, and it's really nice to see a kind of inside look of how it's done. And although some of the technical stuff is lost in a few, there's also a few people that are really just sort of salivating over the technical sharing that you've done tonight as well. So I think you've answered our questions all over the place from a very personal learning perspective of the concepts and right into the technical. So I think you've done a really good job with helping us out on all ends. So I really just wanted to say thank you very much for coming in. And I don't think there's any questions, but we all really appreciate that. We even got a few people. Thanks for our guests that came in that are not in the class, Ben and Darcy and Dean and Jeff. Thanks for coming in as well. So I know you always have a great audience, so that's about it. So we're meeting tomorrow with the rest of the class in Second Life. Look at your Google Groups account, and you should see an SL URL. And for those of you who can make it tomorrow, we will be meeting at 7 o'clock as usual. So, and Stephen, if you want to join us, you can certainly meet us in Second Life. So other than that, thanks, everyone, and good night from Napa, North Battleford.
And that looks like a wrap, so I'm going to turn off Audacity if it's still running. Uh-oh, well, that doesn't look good. No, it looks like Audacity went down for the count somewhere. Oh, wait, here we go. Come back. Yeah, you're working. Good. So I'll stop you.